Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Black Techies Podcast, courtesy of HBCU Digital Network. I am your host, Herbert Seward. I am joined once again today by my boy, David Matthews, a.k.a. Packet Stealer, and Dominique Bass, a.k.a. Blackity Black Man. How is everybody doing?
Hello.
Y'all enjoy?
Doing all right.
Yeah, man. So what's up, man? How things going?
Man, I'm just... So you all know, if you follow me on like Twitter or Facebook, whatever, like you all know, I got a I've been in the midst of a career transition. I'm a network engineer now, but I'm studying to be a web developer, front end to be exact. So if you see me talking about, you know, CSS and JavaScript all the time, I even changed my Twitter name to a JavaScript.
That's just
I guess I'm a nerd like that, but. But yeah, that's what I've been doing. Just even this morning,
need y'all, man. Everybody ain't able. I learned a little Python for a class for school. I'm done. It's not my jam. If I can stay away, I know if I actually switch my career from sales to actual like IT, like practitioner, I know that you have to know some scripting, definitely.
Right.
I don't want to code as my job. Like, I want to know it, but I don't want to do it.
Like, see, that was going to be me, right? That's literally what I said. At one point, I was like, I don't want to code for a living, and yet here I am. It's amazing how things change, right?
Yeah, and we're so different now than we were 20 years ago, and how different we'll be in 5 years, 10 years. Yeah, I get it.
But it'll allow me, one, to maybe work from home. I don't know. Also, if I can, maybe if I started, you know, my own business, web development business, I can do it. Maybe I can do that. We'll see. I'm thinking about making the Black Techies new page, but we'll see what happens down the line.
Yeah, it's a labor of love, man. You right. Know, ain't nobody paying you to do it, so.
Oh man, did we lose? Oh, okay.
No, yeah. He good. He'll be back in a second.
All right. Well, I guess I'll be interim host in while Herb's out. That was me. What about you?
Recently I'm still in sales, but I recently just started, I work for Dell's cloud or as a service, like section. They're spinning it up and it's been pretty good, man. Because I have to speak now, I have to speak multi-cloud and cloud tenancy and all these things that I have to learn about, that I'm learning about in school too, because I'm finishing up, my cybersecurity degree.
Nice.
But it's like interesting to see it like in practice, right? When you're in school, you see it differently than when you're in, when you're like selling it and you never have to use it. But like, I'm kind of learning it from both sides right now. And the only addition that can make me stronger is like actually being in there and having to use this stuff and it mattering, you know, that kind of thing.
So like, are you learning like all of it, AWS, Google Cloud?
I'm not learning how to use them. I'm learning their features. Right. Learning like use cases. I'm learning like, you know, why did AWS become what it was, the monster giant that it is? And then, you know, kind of where, what the downsides of that are, what the, you know, that those kinds of things. So.
Right.
Yeah. A lot of times when companies were like, hey, we're going to the cloud, everybody thought it was an easy button. And then once you take all your workloads off prem into the cloud, then you realize, oh, it's free to get in there. It ain't free to get out of there. Them egress fees will rack you up, boy. And so now customers, when you got like in-memory databases, heavily used, heavily trafficked files, where it's like you're doing a lot of downloading and uploading.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's like
go in. They busting your head for every megabyte coming out, and companies were like, ha, we got to call them and tell them not to take all them servers out that room. We gonna have to spin some stuff up. We got to spin up some VMs.
Yeah, it's like the IT version of a roach trap. Seriously.
Yeah.
Exactly. it's funny we're talking about that. Later on in the show, we're probably gonna be talking about another industry that's kind of sucking people in and, you know, really, you know, fleecing them for dollars, which is the EV industry right now. But
come on, Segway King.
But as a, you know, real quick before we get started, Bobby Digital has a new handle.
In the building.
Bobby Digital. All right.
Okay. I likes that. Okay. No more Miles Morales. Bobby Digital. Okay. I can dig it. For those of you that just joined the podcast, we are joined today by David Matthews, aka Packet Stealer, myself, the host Herbert Seward III, aka the Black Tony Stark, Bobby Digital, aka Roberto Joseph, and Blackity Black Man, the most militant techie on the planet, aka Dominic Bass.
Yeah.
And you know, before we get started, I want to give a real quick big shout out to Texas Southern University. You see them repping their gear today. Those guys really showed me a lot. Wow, such hate.
I mean, we are older than them, really... so. And yeah, I'm just kidding. I mean, go ahead.
Yeah, those guys showed me a lot of love this past weekend. I was in town on behalf of HBC Digital Network covering the Pepsi National Battle of the Bands. You know, was on campus, you know, the Ocean of Soul alumni and student body was really, really hospitable. You know, big shout out to those guys, big shout out to Pepsi, you know, for having, you know, practically selling out NRG for that event. You know, there's like good 55 to 65,000 people in NRG Stadium to check out the Battle of the Bands, and you know, even more people viewing the Battle of the Bands outside. So it was a success. You know, shout out to our overlords at HBCU Digital Network for, you know, having, you know, giving the brother media credentials to get down there and check things out. Thank you, bosses. So I really appreciate all of you guys, you know, all the fun that we had down there. Now, that being said, there's some things that have been going on today that we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about electric vehicles and the state of the industry. You know, our boy Bobby Digital, you know, is our resident EV expert. So he's going to be kind of taking the lead in that segment. We're also going to be doing some, you know, some fanboy nerd stuff today. And we're going to be talking about She-Hulk. So She-Hulk has pushed a lot of buttons, to say the least. I haven't watched everything in it, so I'm going to be very interested in seeing everybody else's responses prior to, you know, me watching this.
Do you care about spoilers?
Because right, that was going to be my next question.
Because if you haven't seen it. yeah. I mean, yeah, I guess we can still talk about it without necessarily... I mean, has anything really been spoiled? I'm spoiling. It hasn't been anything major.
There's
that's cameos. Like earth shattering.
Yeah, there's cameos.
Have been probably spoiled already through memes, especially probably the most controversial cameo and the thickest cameo
that's been. Oh, that's such a thick cameo. Oh,
bruh.
Yo, bruh. My girl Megan is in the Disneyverse, man.
Yeah, I heard. But I think the news we're going to start off with today.
Twerking She-Hulk is crazy, by the way. In your grandfather's wildest dreams when he first read the She-Hulk book, he never was like, one day she's going to be on camera and she's going to twerk, son. You don't know this yet. One day, she's going to be twerking, son. It's crazy.
Man, y'all crazy, man. But yeah, I think the news we're going to start off with today is very HBCU centric, and it has a great deal to do with, you know, our expanding footprint in the world of esports. Those of you guys out there, and Roberto, you're in the AUC, you're an AUC grad at Morehouse. So you've got a pretty close, you know, pulse in terms of Morris Brown and the entire, you know, the struggles they've had and the reboot and the, you know, really remarkable.
Thank God they back.
Yeah, the remarkable recovery that the schools had. Morris Brown inked a pretty big deal this year, this past news cycle. They are a founding institutional member of the Georgia Esports League. And for those folks out there that don't really follow HBCUs and esports all that much, there are a number of programs out there now that are really expanding their footprint in terms of creating teams, creating degree programs. I know we had a while back, Dr. John Cash, of Johnson C. Smith University. You know, he founded their, he and a number of other people founded their, you know, Johnson C. Smith's entire esports degree program, industry and infrastructure and team. You know, since that time, you know, we've seen Benedict, we've seen Morgan State, Hampton, Norfolk, Morehouse. I believe Morehouse has an esports team.
I think FAMU does.
Yeah, Florida.
Yeah, FAMU has one too.
Yeah, they're popping up all over the place. And Coppin State is, you know, in terms of MEAC, they have an esports team. Even the conferences, the SWAC and the MEAC have esports associations now. So it's a really, really big thing. In terms of Morris Brown, it's huge because it's something that, you know, with everything that's happening with that school, you know, esports may actually be an avenue for them to really rebuild a lot of their, you know, student populations in terms of getting back into STEM, getting into some of those partnerships that Google has in the Atlanta area in terms of STEM and HBCU students in the AUC. I wanted to get your thoughts on that. You know, I really, you know, so when I saw the news, I was really excited about it. You know, the president there has been doing some pretty big things. What do you guys think?
I'll go first because I'm probably going to be the briefest. I know everybody's surprised Roberto being brief. But I actually was in the process of selling a car, and one of my neighbors came by, and he was talking to me. His son is actually going to Kennesaw State on a gaming scholarship. He said that he had went to, like, West Virginia and had ended up going there, and because the coach was black, but then the coach left. And he was like, I don't know if you've ever been to West Virginia. And I was like, nah, that'll sound like something I want to do. But he was like, he was not comfortable. So he came back home to go to Kennesaw State. And he was like, people was all over him just for, you know, like his battle royale skills and his college. And he was like, honestly, I wish another HBCU, because I think he said it was a smaller one. I can't remember the name of it. There was a smaller one that tried to recruit him. And he was like, I wish one of the AUC had something already at the start of last year, so he could have taken his son and got it squared away. And I mean, honestly, I don't know whose kid is not like into video games, even at least on the periphery, because all the major athletes and stuff, T-Pain is one of the most probably easily recognizable famous streamers. And I mean, it's a legitimate business now. I'm sure, you know, when my mom was yelling at me to tell me get off the PlayStation 1 and the Sega and crap, like, she wasn't thinking about this being a reality. And I think it's a big deal because we are, I mean, biased opinion, but we are the best content creators. Like, everything that we do is cool. We are the mold. We are the guideline. Every stupid TikTok dance, every trend, everything, we start it. And I mean, like, all that streaming and stuff, nothing against Ninja and all those type of guys, but like T-Pain's stream is way funnier than everybody else's stream. And because, again, not only is he an entertainer, but that extra, the melanin is always extra sauce on top of whatever you do. And I think it's important that we try to gain some equity. We try to gain some share in something that we're probably going to end up dominating too, like we do everything else. And I think it starts with having a reasonable path to go into it, to say like, yeah, I want to go to college and be on this esports team where I can also learn coding. And in case it doesn't work out, I can at least get a, you know, I can follow in Packet Stealer's path and be good at everything in tech, from, you know, coding to security to everything else. So.
Yeah, I wouldn't say everything, but
everything. There's too many things.
Right. So, I'll say, like, I don't know if, even in 2022, I don't know if people realize just how lucrative the gaming industry is. I mean, the gaming makes, like, twice over movies and TV shows and music put together. If you added all that up together, multiplied it times two, that's the gaming revenue, right? And maybe even more than that. I forgot what the exact numbers are. But, like you said, like, this is the time to get in. And I think HBCUs are, like, kind of primed to kind of be on the forefront of these esports leagues. I mean, they are already doing them at our at some predominantly white institutions, but like HBCUs, if you can get this, I don't know, if you imagine, and I think Herb actually suggested a few things the last time we talked about this. I mean, imagine the Bayou Classic or the Florida Classic or, you know, one of those big money classic events, and you add esports on top of that, on top of a step show, on top of homecoming, stuff like that. Right, on top of Battle of the Bands. I mean, like, that's money right there. I mean, that, and that's money that go towards scholarships. That's money that go towards just getting... propping up HBCUs as in general. Like, I have nothing but praise. Yeah. I saw that tweet that you put out about the stats, and I was like, man, that's great.
Yeah, and
let me jump real quick and piggyback off what David said about the revenue. It just to see the scale, in the U.S., gaming was a $9.5 billion industry in 2007. In 2018, it surpassed $134 billion. So, like, you can see just in that time frame, and, you know, like, that's huge for now. And I mean, now it's taken over everything. I mean,
and our school, and that's to like you said, we are the cool. We are cool. Like, we even our nerds are cool. And we define what cool is. We define the genre, and then we define the genre for free and let white people take what we have done and then profit off of it. And so we're in a perfect position to be able to put our personalities up at the forefront. T-Pain ain't the only funny Negro that plays video games, right? And so we could
RDC World.
we could easily just start eating up market share, getting it away from, because people don't really watch to watch you be really good at video games. They watch to watch you play a game they like and be funny or be interesting while you do it, and or be sexy. Yeah. And we got that too. So I'm just saying, the ground is so fertile for this for this to blossom into something that could be generationally impacting, like way to get kids into college, a way to get kids that are in college interested into a field that's not, you know, sports medicine. No knock, no shade. I mean, it's just get them away from like the typical things we do, nursing, and not that we don't need nurses, we definitely do. I'm just saying there's other pathways to success, and this is an easy way of getting people who wouldn't have thought. Also, our boys aren't going to college. Our boys aren't going to college like they need to be. And so this is a great way to get young black boys to go. You can play Madden on scholarship, get the college experience, learn coding, create Madden 2023 or whatever, and then, you know, I just said 2023 like that was a far off year.
This gets people out of poverty though, man. Like this is something that gets you out of poverty. Like, I mean, and if we can make programs where people can like buy a cheap Xbox One or PS4, something like that, where they can get into it, like hone their gaming craft or whatever, get a scholarship. I mean, man, like, and it's relatively low barrier, I think.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I mean, that's why you don't see a lot of black kids playing golf or playing tennis or stuff like that, because there's such a high barrier to entry. Like, I went and played tennis with my brother one time, and I was like, well, let me borrow your racket. He was like, well, don't mess it up. This racket was $350.
Yeah.
I was like,
$350? And I'm, yeah.
You got
and
$150 worth of racket money? Because I don't.
Yeah. and I want folks to really understand the type of following, you know, just around some games. You know, I know, I mean, Dave mentioned earlier, you know, you got celebrity presence, you know, in a lot of game communities now. I mean, anybody that's played Call of Duty has seen Snoop Dogg run around the map sniping people. Snoop is actually an avid gamer and a really good one in Warzone. Everybody hates that dude because, you know, he's literally literally a skilled player. I mean, anybody's ever followed the Street Fighter Evo tour or Tekken 7, you know, those
Legends, Madden, 2K,
Dota, those games and culture and subcultures have huge followings, you know.
And you don't have to be the best to make it a profit, to make a living doing it. And that's the thing that wasn't necessarily true when it first started 10 years ago, you know, 15 years ago when it was like, what was his name? Splashy, Squishy. What was the dude's name that won all that money on Halo? But whatever his name was, he won. You know, I remember they did an interview with him and they asked him, like, how did you come into this? And he basically said, I broke up with my girlfriend. I stopped going to class and I played Halo 12 hours a day for six, you know, for like forever until I got really good at it. But he had to be the number one guy to get like that kind of money. And now the number like 373rd guy is making six figures a year. You know what I mean? And not that everybody can be that, but you can be that and you can still have a life and you can't be part of a team. And I, you know, I hope that TSU, the real TSU, not the one on Herbert shirt, gets a program that we can, because I want to coach. I want to get into, you know what I mean? Like, I want to get in involved. Like, I'm too old to be an esports player, but I'm not too old to, like, provide wisdom. You know? Mm-hmm. I'd love to do it.
My wisdom would be, like, call me get coach, good.
And I'll have to run around. I can sit down and, like, just put a headset on, do exactly what I'm doing now, and you call me coach.
Yeah, and I mean, and I'm going to tell you, man, the investment some of these schools are making, you know, they ain't playing around. Like I said, I saw Benedict's, you know, esports facility. That esports facility is legit. You know, it is really something that, don't mind my dad, he just
he tried to scoot down. Tell him it's all right, he can be on camera.
But yeah, you know, there are a lot of, you know, the HBCUs that are in the space now are making mad investments into it. You got, you know, like I said, Benedict, you know, if you saw that esports facility that they debuted, you know, when they announced things, that facility is ridiculous. You know, I don't know of too many other, you know, PWIs that have facilities like that. You know, same thing with Coppin State. You know, Morris Brown, you know, with that partnership with the, you know, Georgia Esports, you know, League being a founding member, they're going to have some pretty sharp facilities. And I think that's going to be a focal point for them because they're gradually getting everything back in terms of their infrastructure and in terms of, you know, just developing, you know, facilities and stuff for students that are coming back on campus. You know, that's going to be a centerpiece for it. And it's going to be really cool to see that. You know, one of the other things that, there goes my dad again. but one of the other things that, you know, I think people need to understand that are watching this is that you've got a bunch of content creators out there that are covering, you know, the growing scene. I know the HBCU Esports League. I know I share their information a lot on our Twitter feeds and everything. Those guys have done an awesome job in terms of showcasing talent. And I want folks that are watching that are part of, you know, if you got a club or esports team on your campus, look up the Black Techies Twitter feed and drop your team info so we can add you to the growing list of esports, you know, teams that are represented by school. So, you know, somebody asks us for that information or an event comes up, we can, you know, just say, hey, look at the list. Here are the existing HBCU esports entities, programs, degree programs, and teams out there. And like I said, the industry in itself is lucrative. You know, it's hard to deny how lucrative the industry is. So me personally, I'm excited about it. I wish, you know, we had esports leagues for, you know, Killer Instinct and Soul Calibur and all of those things while we were in school.
I was out there being cheap with the Siegfried Long, the sword stab, boy, the four triangle, bow.
Yeah, man. I can't tell you how many games of Killer Instinct got me whoppers and stuff in the game room at the band practice, yeah. You know,
Smash Brothers bought a bunch of books for me back in the day. Sure. You know, I was a problem for a lot of people in that N64 Smash Brothers.
Yeah, man. We're not even talking about the, you know, the savagery of the college football tournaments used to go on in the dorm. You know, so I mean, it's a
We had Halo. We figured out that the dorm was land up. We didn't figure that out till like the second semester. But my first semester, we carried them big back TVs down to the first floor of the dorm and had like hub parties. And then once we figured out we could just plug it up into the wall. Oh, man.
It's a wrap.
Oh, man, the Halo tournament is in Boy Hall, man.
We used to have 8-on-8, like on that one map that you couldn't play if it was just for y'all. That one map with the tank on both sides and the raid on both sides.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it was so good, man. It was so good.
I'm still brand new some of them, folks. Yeah, right.
Yeah, man. But
yeah, young bucks don't know about that.
Y'all over here got Goku twerking on your Fortnite.
On that note, we're going to segue into our first break, courtesy of AT&T. Stay tuned.
We all stand on the shoulders of those who came before us.
A black future happens all the time. It's built on a foundation of those who have paved the way. A generation ago, all of this would have seemed unheard of. And what's new to the world now will be incomparable to what's coming up next. Trust your dream. The future is counting on it.
And we are back. Before we go any forward, I want to send a quick shout out to one of our missing black techies, Leslie Moore. You know, she's been grinding. If anybody, you know, has followed our podcast, Leslie has been a consistent contributor to our podcast, and she is one of the few sisters that are on our podcast, which brings me to the next. We are always looking for additions, and we are always looking for women additions in tech. So when you see our feed and you find something interesting to talk about and you're a woman in tech, a woman of color in tech, drop us a line. Next thing you know, you may end up on the show. Now, that being said, electric vehicles. Now, I saw something that, you know, one of our guest alumna, Tech Me Out, posted not too long ago, probably about a week or so ago. She was doing an ad review for the EV Blazer. And, you know, on the outside, the Blazer looks great, you know, in terms of the aesthetic value of the vehicle. But, you know, I couldn't help but think in the back of my mind, just at the state of the industry and how hard it is to get into an affordable, I say again, an affordable EV that, you know, doesn't look like a box. And I think, you know, it got me to thinking more about the state of the industry and what it's going to take for, you know, one, EVs to become, you know, affordable for that, for the working class and average person. And two, you know, how it got that way in the first place, you know. And of course, our boy Bobby Digital, who's our EV expert, you know, EV, you know, connoisseur. You know, I want to start out with you and getting your thoughts about where the industry's at, where it's going to go, why batteries are so expensive, the whole nine. Let's go.
Well, first off, let me say that this is entirely America's fault. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, a little bit, but I'm not. America is so resistant to change that they even have to put that stupid fake car noise on the electric Challenger or Charger or whichever one it is. I don't remember because I'm not in the Army or military to get bribed for one of those. So I don't know. I'm a regular black guy, not one of those kind of black guys. So it's one of them, but it's that one has the stupidest thing because they're trying to force electric noise in it because I know guys are like, well, what about my exhaust? My Hellcat brings all the girls to the yard. Okay, I understand that, but like my wife's family sedan can burn most cars and I don't need any of that stuff. I don't need to compensate for anything else, so I'm fine. I think a lot of the time, the problem is, like, right now, the average price of a used car, I think, is, like, $33,000. The average price of a new car is, like, $48,000. And I know everybody's like, nah, that's, I can go get a Honda. No, you can't. No, you can't. You can't. Trust me. So every time I follow Motor Trend, I follow Green News, I follow Tesla, I follow all these people. And every time like Motor Trend posted the Rivian R1S today, like their new SUV, and everybody in the comments, oh, stop showing all these, I can't afford it. And then they show like a one of one Bugatti and everybody's like, oh my God, I love, like, which one is it, dude? You can't afford either one. Hell, you can't even afford the Hellcat that you think you like. You can't get that either. So like, every time they show a Cadillac Escalade that gets 1 mile per gallon, everybody's drooling over it, even though it's the base model one is $88,000. Like, you got to pick one because everybody's like, well, they're not affordable. The Hyundai Ioniq 5, which Marquez MKBHD, he's like, this is like one of the best cars I've ever driven. It needs some tweaks. It's first year, you know, like the Google Maps they have integrated isn't great, that sort of thing. But like, it's $45,000 and it's fantastic. Then people are like, well, what if I want to go on a road trip? Like, okay, well, what if you want to go on a road trip? Do you take your car now? Do you rent a car? Well, is Toro still not available to you? Like, what's the problem? Because the cars I've had an electric car that only gets 80 miles of range for 6 years now. And when I go out of town, I just rent a car. Because I'm not spending money on gas. I had somebody stop me at the Kroger yesterday, which they put a new free charger in. He's like, how much does it cost to charge your car? I said, well, here, free. He's like, free? Well, how much does it cost to give you a full tank? And I was like, maybe $5. If I'm in a rush, I go to the expensive thing and maybe it's $9. And he's like, man, I don't know. How much was this? And I said, I paid $11,000 for it 6 years ago, back when nobody wanted it. And now that you guys want this thing, Nissan's being stupid and they're selling $55,000 Nissan Leafs. I wouldn't buy it. I love mine and I wouldn't, no. But again, this is your problem when you start seeing somebody else doing stuff. Gas jumps to $95 a gallon and everybody's like, dang, I need an electric car. And the dealerships who are, I mean,
capitalists.
I mean, to call them vampires would be an insult to the cast of What We Do in the Shadows. They are opportunists. At best. So now you want to buy a used Model 3 that used to be $32,000 for a used one. Now it's $48,000. It's the same thing, but now your dumbass wants it. So now it's more expensive. It's the same. Like if nobody liked diamonds, they would be $10. Yep. Diamonds have no inherent value. Just like NFTs have no, you hear me? NFTs have no inherent value. You're making it up.
How dare you?
Dogecoin has no inherent value. You're making that up too. So this is the same thing, okay? This thing is worth money because it's worth parts in it. But like, the value of the car, you are the problem, not the manufacturer. So now Honda and Panasonic and Toyota and all these other companies are rushing to make batteries for this tech that's already took off. I mean, we've been in electric cars. I mean, affordable electric cars have been available for 10 years now. You just didn't want it because it didn't look sexy to you. So now that, you know, like all the other cars were basically, an iPhone with wheels, you are looking at them now, and now they're making electric Blazers. They're making electric Golfs. They're making electric. I don't know what crack Cadillac has on its staff, but they're like, this $200,000 electric vehicle will get 40 miles a gallon, but it'll make, like, what do you do? Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah. I was going to rant. But I think the important thing to remember is that there are used electric cars that you can buy for less than $50,000. And you have to be realistic with yourself. Are you buying an electric car to replace your gas car completely and throw your gas car? Is your gas car already paid for? Is it paid off? Okay, then why would you sell it and then buy? Because now you can just use that gas car to go on road trips.
Yeah,
that also, 2001 Honda Accord coupe
road
is still running
often, where that's a real factor in your day-to-day life. Most people drive to work, drive to the grocery store, drive home, go to a bar from time to time. Like, what are you doing? If you're an over-the-road trucker, don't buy an electric car. You're good.
Yeah, I drive 26 miles one way to work. Well, I have a charger at work, and I charge it. And even when I don't, I make it back home, and I still have like 30-40% of my battery left. If I need to stop at Kroger, I can do that. For those people, Kroger's a Southern grocery store.
Like Ralph's.
You know, We know, just like
y'all have up north.
Just like Publix.
What y'all got? Yeah. Harry Reader. What y'all got? What y'all got up north?
Yeah. Well,
we got, we got Amazon Fresh. Well, you don't even need a cashier. You just walk in and walk out.
I
used to do that at Walmart when I was in college.
That's what we call that self checkout.
Yes, five finger discount.
I was using my employee discount.
Yeah,
since I was scanning my own stuff. I mean,
I think this is free.
All jokes aside, there needs to be somebody other than. If I'm Tesla, I can't be the ones that are like fighting with Panasonic about batteries. And Panasonic's like, hey, Ford just hit me up and was like, we need 11 billion batteries. And, you know, they can make it. You can't. Like, yes, Tesla is still like, I think they're 60% market share alone. And then, mind you, that's not counting Fisker and Polestar and Rivian and all these, there's probably 10 EV makers right now, not including the big guys like the GMs and the Fords that are getting into the game, and Honda, who's still waiting. I think Sony will probably make an electric car before Honda does at this point. But
this is true.
I mean, like, there's a lot of players in the game, and the problem always is either the range isn't right or the price isn't right. Yeah. And if you're trying to play catch up and everybody's trying to do this, instead of trying to make another Model S, somebody needs to make a Leaf. Honda Civic hatchback with an electric motor. And everybody keeps swinging for the fences. They keep chasing Tesla. And I think that's what I love about the Hyundai electric cars, because Hyundai's like, I'm going to make a sensible car that has plugs everywhere with a screen that's basic. With still that has like touch buttons and regular interior, and I'm not gonna do nothing too crazy. I don't need no African and dengue wood inside here. We just put in regular plastic. We don't need no carbon fiber. You ain't getting no glass. When you close the door, it's not gonna sound solid. It's gonna sound like, that's what it's gonna sound like. It's not gonna be no clunks. Okay. You want 250 miles of range and you want to spend $45,000? Here it is. You got it.
Hold up, fam. Where's my disclaimer?
but it's funny though, right? So Hyundai already has, like, you don't even have to get the Ioniq 5, right?
You don't.
You can get the they have another one,
the Niro.
That's
technically Kia.
There's another one. Right. It's another the Ioniq. It's the Hyundai Ioniq EV. Yeah, I go. It's the hatchback version.
It's just the Ioniq.
Just the Ioniq. That's a very good point, because I know
they have like six different Ioniqs for some reason.
The Hyundai and the Kia offerings, the Kia EV5 offering is practically,
and the EV6 is pretty.
The EV6 is really nice, and I mean, folks, and I think the point that Roberto, aka Bobby Digital, brought up is really valid, because I think a lot of, you know, the American perception of what the car industry is, you know, has a direct impact on how people perceive electric vehicles. Because the early editions of electric vehicles weren't sexy. They weren't muscle cars. They didn't have the European appeal of an Audi or even Volkswagen, you know, and some of the commercial things that we've seen the major manufacturers come out with, you know, are still even, you know, light years behind some of the newer offerings that people have gotten. Like, there's I forgot the name of the company, but there's a EV company based out of Vietnam that's come over to the United States. And they've set up shop in Alabama, I believe, and I'm not sure if they have a factory location in Georgia, but Alabama, they're already producing EVs for the US market. And they're producing
VinFast,
there you go. And they are producing them at a fraction of the cost that you normally see the same types of EVs with the same types of functionality. And I think, you know, what we have to really, we're going to have to really get to a tipping point as far as the car industry goes, in terms of figuring out what's practical and, you know, and putting practical first, as opposed to, you know, sexy and status symbol driven. You know what I'm saying? Because that's what the industry is.
we have 13 years left before it won't be a choice, right? When in 2035, you can't sell a gas car in California. I'm sure California, it makes up a significant portion of all cars being sold, period. I don't have the stats exactly, but I just know based on population percentage and where the money is, I know that over there, they buying a lot of cars. So manufacturers are all going to have a legitimate electric offering, and a significant portion of their portfolio will need to be electric for them to survive. That in California won't be the only state to do that. So by the time 2035 rolls around, I'm sure New York will be on that bandwagon. Washington, D.C. will be on that bandwagon. You know, there's two or three, like, you know, Oregon and Washington State.
17 different states. 17 different states, in addition to California, are looking at that law, which, I mean, you can still buy a used gas car, but brand new ones.
Yeah. And there will be a limit. I guarantee you there will be a limit to how long you'll be able to buy one used, just because people are finally waking up to realize, oh, I think it actually is hurting the environment just a little bit, guys. Let's there's an actual thing we can do other than this, so let's just do that. And the gas companies are like, no, burn the planet down. And then they're like, yeah, we'll keep burning the planet a little bit, but we're gonna stop soon, guys. Everybody's like, we're gonna stop soon. Like,
yeah. So, and then close. Ford's like, we've planted 100 trees. And you're like, oh, thanks.
Like, you just mowed down. John, like, Oliver did 3, a whole thing about that.
To make that other, like, plant.
Carbon offset thing. They're just lying. They're just lying.
Yeah, and it's crazy. Yeah. And I think, you know, the environment and what technology has done to help or hinder the process of saving it is an entirely different topic for a new episode of the Black Techies, shameless plug. But, you know, I think this is a really, it's a good point, you know, and it's something that, you know, we're all guilty of it at some, you know, we're all guilty of it at some point in terms of looking at
a Grand Wagoneer right now.
See, there you go. Maybe.
Canyonero. You know,
yeah.
You and my wife are looking at that darn Grand Wagoneer.
if the price of the car can come down
like 20%, it's on me. I'm getting it.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny because we have one of our core members, Miss Ebony Burroughs, North Carolina A&T grad. Shout out to Ebony.
That e-tron.
You know, I'm still going to hit you up for content concerning that e-tron, babe. So yeah, stay tuned. But yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, at some point, like I said, there's going to be a tipping point where, you know, the public is just not going to buy, you know, those things that are status driven, you know, because the reality on the ground is going to force you not to, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it's a really interesting dynamic seeing that play out in the EV industry, because we've heard all sorts of things about, you know, where batteries are expensive to make. You know, the technology has been out there, but nobody wants to make it available for the working man, blah, blah, blah. And
so, I do have a question, though. So the actual, like, infrastructure, electric infrastructure, right? Do you think that we will have that? I mean, like, imagine. All right, so when the pandemic first started, right, and everyone was going virtual and all that, like Zoom, Teams, all of those services, like, they all went down because everyone was trying to do virtual at the same time, right? I mean, they eventually caught up, but, like, you got to make capacity for that. So, like, right now, if everyone had an electric car and plugged it up into the grid, right, it's Do we have that infrastructure now?
I don't think the switch flips like that. Yeah. I think it's a
casual. I mean, it's gradual. Like,
yeah. I mean, we have to make sure
that's
passed part of the Inflation Reduction Act that was just passed by you guys as president, by our president, I should say. I mean, it's not a political podcast. Dark Brandon,
this episode is
passed. The Inflation Reduction Act, and part of that is money for the electrical grid. It's bad everywhere, and it ain't ready for an electric switch because it's barely ready for a heavy rain, right? In a lot of places in this country, a heavy rain will take you out, you know what I mean? And we can't have it where heavy rain takes all the vehicles off the road. So there needs to be some hardening of...
Heavy Rain was a fantastic video game, by the way.
If you had a PlayStation to play, I missed that bad that game. But I mean, it's just it's a thing that's going to happen, I believe, over time. And there definitely are plans to put it out here. The problem is, when Trump gets elected again in 2024, he's going to derail these projects till 2028, and so then we'll have a lot of things to do between 2028 and 2035 when all of the cars need to be electric, allegedly. But I think to answer your question, it'll definitely, we can't handle it today, but we don't have to.
I mean, but today. And also for somebody who not only has electric vehicles, but I also install the chargers for customers. What up, Legacy Tech? it's very simple things like you change some circuits, you change some breakers, you install an outlet that's similar to something that you plug a dryer into, or a server. And I mean, I think my car uses about as much electricity as a microwave in Idaho. So it does. I know everybody's like, once you plug that Tesla into the house, like all the lights dim and it's like turning the AC on. It's not that big of a draw. And also it's over time. I mean, there is no plans for you to be able to plug your car in and then it's charged in like 10 minutes. Those don't exist in the house as of right now. I mean, maybe at some point they will, but all of those chargers, like the superchargers, like when you can go plug a car in and it charges at 800 miles an hour or something like that. Those are only in, you know, like parking lots and by Starbucks or, you know, wherever rich people who can afford that sort of thing go. But most of the chargers that you have are 60 amp maximum chargers that charge about 44 miles an hour or something like that. So it's less intense, even though if everybody were on my block were to turn on their microwave at the same time, I'm sure the power grid would be like, what was that?
Yeah, it would shake.
Yeah, but I don't think it would go down. I mean,
you can't turn your microwave and plug your vacuum up at the same time in your house unless you got a really, really, really well designed home. So
I think we're not ready. Our bridges keep falling over and we don't want to put in trains because whatever.
It's coming, man. Dark Brandon just promised it, guys.
Yeah.
Don't you believe Dark Brandon?
We need something.
All right. Real quick, we're going to take our last ad break of the podcast, courtesy of AT&T, and then we're going to come back and talk about She-Hulk, DC, Marvel, and pretty much everything else in between. Stay tuned. And I need to put the ad break on, so stay tuned.
We all stand on the shoulders of those who came before us.
A black future happens all the time. It's built on a foundation of those who have paved the way. A generation ago, all of this would have seemed unheard of. And what's new to the world now will be incomparable to what's coming up next. Trust your dream. The future is counting on it.
All right, and we are back here on the Black Techies Podcast, and we about to talk about some nerd stuff. Specifically, She-Hulk and some other things that are coming down the pike in terms of Marvel and DC. We might even slide into some Black Adam talk before the show is over with, but I'm going to start with She-Hulk. And
what could like go wrong?
can I just say that one of my friends shared a Facebook memory today. This is super quick. 2014, he was like, The Rock just confirmed he's playing Black Adam. Can't wait to see this movie. And then he reposted it today. He was like, and we still ain't seen this yet.
Yeah, he'd be dropping balls, man.
I'm like, dang, it's that long?
But, yeah.
Okay. She-Hulk.
And like I said, I got some thoughts about Black Adam. You know,
Yeah, the trailer. Give it a chance because it's the brainchild of The Rock instead of like DC doing it. Just like Deadpool was resurrected by Ryan Reynolds' fervor for the IP. So I'm gonna give it a shot. I have no thoughts that it's actually gonna be good, but
yeah, I have no expectations.
Yeah,
which is why
DC has been killing it lately, because we have dropped our expectation level. Is we understand we're not going to go see a Marvel movie. These movies be like a DC 8, Marvel 4.
Yeah, and this is a commentary on just how trash DC has been over the decades
in terms of live action,
their animation is fantastic.
Animation.
Yeah, we all know that.
Yeah, you know, they
got some of the best animated. They got some of the best animated storytelling, comic book or otherwise, on the planet, and it ain't even close.
Yeah, they're the goats when it comes to animated films and features.
Like the Ninja Batman. Did y'all see Samurai Batman or whatever it was? The Batman.
Yeah, I saw that one.
Yeah, Ninja Batman. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was dope. But but She-Hulk, man. Like I said, I haven't seen all of the episodes yet.
It's three episodes in. It's only been three episodes so far.
Yeah, but
yeah, and they like what 25 minutes long or something.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean,
even with those three episodes, there's been a lot of feedback.
can I jump in here and say and give a theory?
Yep.
Might want to get your disclaimer thing ready.
Hold on here.
He's like, hold up.
Nerds are some of the most bigoted, racist, sexist, feminist, chauvinist, not feminist. Take the feminist part out. That's not a bad one to be.
Anti-feminist.
Sometimes it can be. Yeah, anti-feminist. They're the worst, right?
Mm-hmm.
Third sister disclaimer. on Obi-Wan was a phenomenal character.
Yeah.
They hated on her. She-Hulk, so far, it's been a pretty interesting show. She's funny. Mm-hmm. It's pretty well, and she's weird looking sometimes, but like it's a Disney show. It's not a movie. It's like this same thing on a movie, maybe not, but because the fight in the courtroom was mad cheesy when the girl did like the back forward punch move, and I was like, that's weird. She's on a zip line. It's weird, right? Yeah. But the story that they're trying to tell, I'm not mad at, and the way that she like in the last episode. Spoiler alert! I'm gonna say spoiler alert, and I'm gonna just sit for a second. If you care about spoilers, we're gonna talk about what happened in She-Hulk. It's been three episodes; nothing's that serious. But the one action scene that was in this last episode was when she got mugged at the end of it, and she was like, she was as a woman, that's like has to be. And I know women have to like feel that, and I hate that it was four black men talking about the experience of a woman, but we don't have no women on here right now. So like Herbert said, if you are a woman who is in tech and you want to hop on, we'd love to have you for this kind of stuff right here. But like immediately she had to have felt, oh my God, this is like the worst fear. It's what I always imagine every time I walk out of my house. This is the thing that I think might happen before I get back home. And then she's like, I'm about to beat the brakes off these boys. Let me go green real quick. And then she proceeded to break these boys off. And so it was cathartic for me as not even a woman. I was just like, yes, I wish all my sisters could turn into a Hulk and beat the brakes off these dudes who are, because there are men out there that are like that. I said all that to say, I do believe that this show does have like a feminist tilt. But that's not a bad thing. Don't watch it. If you're so misogynist that you can't have a woman protagonist, don't watch it. Don't watch it and then hate it like that. And I don't like that there's a woman, and anyway, they have to keep saying that she's a woman. It's called a She-Hulk.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I got to tell you, man, fanboys spoil everything, dude.
They're the worst. Even though I'm a fanboy. But I'm not that kind of fanboy. I'm a woke fanboy.
No,
woke-ish.
Yeah, we have to create a disclaimer for the types of fanboys, categorization of the types of fanboys we're talking about.
Straight white male fanboys are the worst.
Hence the disclaimer that screaming across the bottom of the screen.
I mean, some brothers that's problematic too. I ain't gonna hold you.
Yeah, right. But I mean, but it's crazy because it's it's been indicative of some of the things that Marvel touches on that touches a nerve with certain demographics, so to speak. And you know, to me, Marvel, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, as long as you're touching those nerves,
you're doing your job
because
Kamala Khan She sat on them. They ain't like that either. They ain't like touch that either. Nerves. All that muscle of love.
And that was one of the best shows I've ever seen, like superhero really or otherwise.
Right. I didn't like it. I thought it was mad cheesy, but I'm glad somebody liked it. I didn't hate it. It was just like, ah.
I mean, I think it was because so Ms. Marvel was aimed at more of a somewhat younger demographic, right? That's so I can't, I kind of, which is fine. I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with having that show for like the Gen Z, right?
Right, 12 to 18 range.
Like the one thing that, and I know we're talking about She-Hulk, but like for Ms. Marvel, I've heard people say or complain that, oh, they're pushing Islamic ideals on me. I'm like, she's a Muslim, but.
Yeah, like how do you?
That's what he's a Muslim. What are you? So,
but how many? I mean, but we never said this about Daredevil. I mean, and Daredevil is a staunch Catholic. Daredevil goes and beats the brakes off of 15 people, and then goes and talks to a priest. He had a whole 2-episode arc where he was inside of a Catholic church, and not one person was like, "Oh, I feel like they're trying to push Catholicism on me."
So and what they're saying when they say that and they don't realize that they're saying it, but what they're really saying is white stuff is default and it's okay. All of the facets of white life are okay on my screen. But when you bring a brown or black person on, you need to bring them on this screen, on my white screen, in a way that makes me not feel uncomfortable. And because Tucker Carlson and Newt Gingrich told me that Muslims were bad right after 9/11, I hate Muslims today. From a thing that happened 20 years ago, that it's so stupid. It's so dumb. Mm-hmm. But that's the world that we live in. And like, you can't, if you get them to articulate, like, why do you not like this? They couldn't even say it out loud to themselves because it's so stupid.
I will say, I think She-Hulk actually, ironically, even though at least the first few episodes, I think actually gave a lot more background for the Hulk, for Bruce Banner. Like, he actually had a nice little background because you know, in Endgame, right, he fused the Bruce Banner and the Hulk, but we didn't see how that happened. And some people think that that melding isn't permanent, that something's going to happen, and because you saw him leave to on that Sakaarian ship or whatever, right? And so some people think that's going to lead to like World War Hulk or whatever. And so I'm kind of interested in seeing what they do with that. But
I sure do hope they do something with that, because they have nerfed the hell out of the Hulk. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's the common complaint I've heard about the Hulk.
I hear what you're saying, but it's kind of like video games. Like I'm playing Baldur's Gate, and I was wondering why the cap level is at 12. And I just started playing the tabletop game with real people. Excuse me. It's a super nerdy game. It's a super nerdy thing to do, and I love it. But I found out that once you get to level 20, you can break games. There's no way to make a level 20. So I said all that to say, because like, you can just literally ask your god for a favor in Dungeons and Dragons. Once you get to level 20, if you're a cleric, you'd be like, hey, that really bad guy over there, can you just tell him to go away? If you roll over a 13, then he's just going to go away. And so you can't have that in a video game. That doesn't work in a video game. I said that the way I'm correlating that to Hulk is, if Hulk was really the Hulk, he's like Superman. It's the right reason you can't make a good Superman movie, because he's unbeatable. Because the more you hurt him, the bigger and stronger he gets. And so he really would have destroyed Thanos. The movie Endgame doesn't even come to it, because he would have beat the brakes off of Thanos, because every time Thanos hit him, he would have gotten bigger and stronger. Hence, end of the movie. Hence, there is no funny scenes where the Hulk's trying to burst up out of Bruce Banner. No, you don't get none of that, because the movie would have ended in the first 12 minutes when Thanos ran up on Hulk. You dig?
Let me ask you all before we. I know. wants us to kind of wrap up. But as far as She-Hulk is, so what do you all think of like the series itself? Like just so far, like do you think? Because I mean, just because it has a female protagonist doesn't mean it's good, right?
Third wall. I love her breaking the third wall.
And FYI, she did that before Deadpool.
She's been doing that since the comics,
right?
I think my problem with a lot of what's going on with the She-Hulk stuff is that people are very defensive immediately when they're like, "Well, I just don't like the show." And I'm like, "Why not?" Like, "Oh, I watched the first episode and I didn't like it," and I'm like, you said the same thing about WandaVision. What made you come back and stick to it and finish watching it? Because WandaVision, the first 2 episodes were hard to get through. And then the rest of it was like, I'm mad they don't have more episodes. But She-Hulk is, it's very like a law comedy with superheroes is very hard to pull off. I mean, like Harvey Birdman, stuff like that was hilarious, but you can't go all the way comedy. And also She-Hulk's character in the show, in the comic books, is very, not very serious about herself. She's not very serious about anybody else because she's a Hulk and she could literally rip somebody in half if she wanted to. So she doesn't really need to be humble or be cool about stuff. And I think it's very hard for people, for me reading these comments, which is funny because they actually put actual like comments in the last episode where people are like, oh, why does she have to be a She-Hulk? Why can't she get her own thing? Like, why do they have to make a derivative character? Those are actual comments from like their Marvel's actual Instagram that they put on into the show. And it's funny because they're like, oh my God, a character twerking, she would never do that. And I was like, have you not read the comic book? Because she dances and has a good time all the time. She's literally Spider-Man level quippy and funny, but she's strong enough to punch a building in half. So like, I think it's a lot of people that are like, well, you can't say I'm a misogynist just because I don't like the show. And I'm like, well, if you don't like the show because you refuse to watch it because there's a woman lead, it kind of makes you seem stupid.
The kicker is they're watching every episode and they're going to watch every episode and they're just going to hate watching a hate comment. And that's what it is. We got to stop worrying about them because their voices are loud, but they are few. Right. And so I think we're all right.
Yeah. But I also think on the Miss Marvel thing, my mother-in-law loved that show. She loved it. I mean, she's Indian. So like a Pakistani character that was talking about like everything about that reminded me of her and my wife's family. And it was funny to me. And also New Jersey with foreigners. I'm from New York. Both my parents are foreign born. So like, I think I got a lot more commonality out of it. And also
I started calling my daughter Betha after that.
I watch like stupid tween stuff. Like I watched Riverdale until it went stupid, like in the second season somewhere. But Stranger Things, Riverdale, like all the CW shows, that Miss Marvel was better than every one of those shows and more mature and more quality than all of those shows. But we sat there and watched all those shows because they were based on some square jawed white kid that was doing stuff. And the Flash's supervillains were so stupid.
So
like,
stupid.
This guy was on a bus listening to headphones, so now he can make sound waves. But we still watched it. You know, we still watched it.
I hate that the big bad in every episode of the Flash, in every season of the Flash, this is Flash. This is Backwards Flash. This is Flash 2.
The first two seasons were great.
I didn't know every single season was going to be a rehash of the first two seasons. Reverse Flash, and then what was the boy's name?
Evil wheelchair guy.
Yeah.
And then evil best friend, and then evil wife doppelganger. And I'm just like, we get it. You guys can only hire 5 actors, and you're just recycling them. But I didn't think about that. Criticism that people have about Miss Marvel and She-Hulk and the sidekick mission, Hawkeye, I want them to go back and watch any one of those CW Arrowverse shows and tell me that was better.
The Lords of Tomorrow, or what was it called? The one where they tried to put them all in the same.
The Heroes of Tomorrow, or
the Legends of Tomorrow.
Legends of Tomorrow. But I mean, admittedly, after like season 2, they understood that they were goofy, and they took it very seriously about their goofiness. They leaned into that.
Superpowers called Vibe, and
Well, on that note, we are going to bring this show to a close. Again, to our audience that caught us, we've got some viewers on both HBC Digital and on Facebook that have been, you know, with us during the entire episode. Thank you guys. Thank you for everybody that's in the collective that follows us on social media. Thank you for your support. If you need to find out more about the Black Techies, find out, you know, some insider stuff about topics, tips, join our Discord channel. We also have a Twitter feed, and we have a website, theblacktechies.com, where all of our content is centralized. Again, thank you to HBCU Digital. Thank you to AT&T. Until next time, hail Wakanda.
Wakanda forever! Wakanda.
Shout out to Meg Thee Stallion.